Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. I am Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Well, today I'm interviewing Ian Vernon, director of Best Little Whorehouse in Rochdale. His movie recently received an audience award at this year's Palm Beach International Film Festival, and he's calling me all the way from England. I believe I have him on the line. Let's check. Ian, are you
Hello.
There? Hi, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'm fine, thank you.
Great.
I'm here in the rain.
Well, let's start off talking a little bit about your film. For those that haven't seen it, let's talk about what the plot is first.
Okay. Yes, it's Hull House in Rochdale is based on Joan, the main character, and she's been happily married since she was a teenager, and she's now in her early 40s, and never actually ever had a relationship with another man. And her husband dies, and she now has to find a way of making a living, and often lose the mortgage on her house. So with her friends, who are part-time cleaners, she isn't making enough money. So he sets about by setting up a phone sex talk line from home, which she does herself. And it's relatively successful, but the problem is it's not making enough money. And through a sequence of circumstances, she hits upon the idea of setting up what's called a cooperative brothel. And Rochdale is a tiny town in the northwest of England, and it's famous because it was the first ever cooperative brothel. First cooperative society was set up in Rochdale. And for people in America, I think many people don't know exactly what a cooperative is. It's like a joint partnership. Everybody who works for whatever company has totally equal share of the profits, and the cooperative society in England is synonymous. They are actually they have insurance companies, they have travel companies, it's a bank, and so forth. And so the idea of setting up as a brothel was a bit of a novel thing. And yeah, it's basically the idea of them setting up a brothel, and the fact that Joan herself starts out as a very timid, very quiet girl who won't, or woman who won't say anything to anybody, out of line, and becomes a much more determined, strong, and could say successful, competent woman.
Mhm. But then this is a comedy, right?
Exactly. This is the point of it. Yes. It was very hard to do a comedy whereby you had no nudity and no sex. And the key to the Best of the Whorehouse in Rochdale is that they offer everything except sex. So it's, you could say, within the brothel, it's all about sort of titillation and fantasy, but it's done in a very innocent way. And I wanted to write a film that was, you could say, about the idea of, you know, associated with sex, but there was no sex in it whatsoever, and there was no nudity, there's no sexual content of any real sort. It's more, you could say, bravado or talking about it, or humorous situations that the people who set up the brothel, which are mainly Joan and her two friends, very eccentric friends also, one of whom is 65 years old, that they're all, in a sense, desperate for a relationship, or they're desperate at least for a man or sex or whatever you want to call it, but yet they set up a brothel where there's no sex anyway.
So that's kind of the irony of the whole thing.
Yes, and I mean, I like stories that generally have a happy ending. And so, you know, I think if somebody's going to watch a film, we can all watch art house dancers and appreciate the quality of them, and I do. But generally, I want something that either uplifts me or is a total escapism. And so I wrote something that had a, you could say, a very happy ending.
No pun intended.
Yes, exactly.
How did you come up with this storyline?
My first feature had many actors I work with because I've taught screen acting for many years, you could say as a sideline, I suppose. And one of the actors I've known for easily for 15 to 20 years had a tiny part in my first film. And because I know her very well, she kept going on at me saying, well, when are you going to put me in one of your films properly? When are you going to put me in? They said, when I come up with an idea. And so knowing the kind of person she is and the fact that she's also a very good actress, I had to come up with a situation that I thought she could be very natural in, and also that I knew I would be able to film with no budget. And after my first film, which was totally filmed outside, actually in horrific cold weather, I said, now I'm going to film something indoors with very few locations. And so knowing how Jenny Howarth Williams, the main character, the main actress is in real life, I came up with the fact that if you're in a room with Jenny, the room goes blue, for want of a better way of putting it, because she is the kind of person who will call a spade, so to speak, and she doesn't hold back. And she has a great humor, and she makes fun of herself, and so forth. And so I came up with the idea and wrote it, actually, very quickly. And one of the other main characters, Denise Hope, is actually Jenny's best friend in real life. And the two of them together, I mean, they'll embarrass people. Anybody under the age of 18 is like, their face goes red when the two of them are just talking in the room together. So it was written with very much them in mind, and it was, you could say, an exaggeration of the two main characters.
Mm-hmm. And then your budget was really small. How did you pull it off with such a small budget?
Well, the budget was, quite frankly, non-existent. My first feature had cost was a budget which, by feature film standards, was incredibly small, because the first film was a budget of $50,000. And when I came up with the film, which was only literally about 8 months later, we were going into production on Best of the Horror House. I said to all the actors involved, well, I've got the script here. I've got money whatsoever because I've spent it all. And if you guys were willing, to do it, and many of them already knew me, you could have Steve in it. And I had worked with or knew the actors involved or even had taught them. And they all said, let's do it. Let's go for it. And I said, well, if we're doing it, every year improving its in the sense that they were being paid what's called a deferred contract. Some of this is not aware, but a deferred contract tends to mean the kind of agreement that if the film eventually sells, you will get paid for their daily needs. And so all the actors came on board, and because of that, I said, well, all right, I'll film with you guys, because I knew some of the actors involved actually did a lot of work. There's no way they're going to turn on paid work. So I said, I'd film with them, which logistically became a nightmare. It wasn't a question of just weekends and so forth, because the actors actually worked on weekends. So to get the main key five actors together, there's a lot of scenes with five actors, to get them together, away in a tour of the UK in Shakespeare or something, and managed to get one day a week when they're not actually doing the play, and then to get the other actors to get on the same day was a nightmare. But so the budget was seriously non-existent. It was me saying, all right, there's money, lunch, paying for lunches and getting the odd little props here and there. And that was all, it was great. They did all band together, and some of them, most of them were their own clothes, and occasionally they'd go down Goodwill stores and get certain items of clothing that would be suitable. And then the rest, I had to actually go into a sex shop to buy some actions, which was phenomenally embarrassing. And tried to convince behind the counter that it's actually for a film. It's not for me, it's for a film. I'm making a film, honestly. And then the locations, as I said, 90% of the locations were indoors. They were my house, they were one of the actresses' houses, they were one of Jenny's houses, they were a friend's house, and so forth.
That makes it a lot easier. What about music for the film? How did you find music?
Well, I am very, very particular about music, and a lot of it's very easy these days to create a generic epic sounding film scores because there's plenty available. You can even create them very easy with loops, sound loops of epic orchestras and things. But I always like things that sound much more individual. My first film, Rebels Without a Clue, I wanted very sort of Korean-type sounding music with a sort of accordions and 3-4 time rather than 4-4, which tends to be the usual thing. And I also found the music of Eric Satie, who's a very famous composer, and also a lot of his stuff is in public domain now, but I got it re-recorded with a classical pianist. And so that was very precise. And that one actually won Best Soundtrack as well as other awards. So with Best of Lahore House, because it's classic, very northern English film, it's to me the north is synonymous with brass band music. And so I wanted brass band music, and therefore, which was very difficult because you can't just say to somebody in a recording studio, okay, use sound loops of brass band and use samples for trumpets and things, because they never truly sound real. And I was very fortunate to meet it with two separate composers who both wanted to come on board, who composed various scores. One of them managed to, his brother actually was in a brass quartet, and he actually got them to record real instruments. And so it is a very authentic northern brass band type sound, which generally is about most of the film. And then there is some music like from Fats Waller from sort of the 1910 or something like that, 1920. Which really adds to a certain, and there's another book by Big Badbeck, which then is from the 1920s era. Almost, you could say in some respects, slightly like early Woody Allen films would be. You know, he tends to go for older like jazz classics and so forth. And that's what I want, something that stood out as individual and a bit to the characters.
Is there anything you would have done differently on the movie besides having a bigger budget?
Definitely. the biggest problem was because we were shooting whenever actors were free, and then a lot of times actors weren't free, then there was crew that came and went because they're moving on to other projects. Some days I would be the only crew member. You know, I would be shooting the whole thing myself. Other times I maybe had a crew of 3 or 4. And that's because I said, all right, we'll shoot it whenever people are free. That became the biggest problem because the impetus, the momentum stopped. I mean, there'd be some periods where we wouldn't do a shoot for six weeks or 7 weeks. And so to get everybody back together and to get the momentum and the enthusiasm going, it changed dramatically. But I was still living it day in, day out, where the actors were off doing other projects. Oh, I'll pop back for another day to shoot the film. But every day I was, you know, editing and so forth. So definitely I would schedule it as a normal film. My first film was where it's just shot over a period of, even if it's 4 or 5 days a week, and that's it. And the actors on board know that has to be done. That's the biggest thing. I think there's very, very little other than that that would change. I mean, I think on the whole, you know, it worked out very well. In fact, it was it was slightly long originally, and I had to trim 15 minutes off it, which is hard because occasionally you have to get rid of the odd scene that you really like. But and when you've written it and you've directed it, you tend to, you know, not want to cut scenes out. But I've learned through past experience, you know, if something has to go, and you watch audience reactions to see when they get bored. And so uh-huh. I definitely schedule it as a normal film.
Now, how do people see the film? Is it going to be another film festival?
Yeah, hopefully. The problem with, you know, many listeners may be filmmakers and many may not, but the problem with any film you make, if it's not got big star names in it, it's very hard to get distribution, so it gets out there to, you know, major DVD outlets or even to the cinema. And so the only real route is film festivals, and it's actually incredibly difficult to get into film festivals. And strangely enough, a lot of film festivals aren't particularly interested in comedy. You know, some film festivals specialize in horror and so forth. I think these days, because of the world climate with regards financial and so forth, I think people are more inclined to, you know, watch a comedy. But again, uh-huh. people would tend to say, well, who's in it? Festivals are more open in that respect. But I'm amazed, actually, because it is a very, very British film in the vein of Full Monty. I suppose many people in America would have heard of Full Monty. And it's a very similar feel. And, I mean, Full Monty actually already had distribution, so it wasn't like some tiny little film that, you know, suddenly made it. It was made on a big budget, in a sense, and it already had distribution, so it was already going to get out there. Best at Lahore House, from a film festival point of view, you submit to a festival maybe 3 or 4 months before the festival will let you know if it's got in. And there's a pecking order, so you want to submit it to the best festivals you can, hoping it's going to get into there. Mm-hmm. So it's been submitted to many other festivals, and I'm still waiting to hear. there are, strangely enough, there are 1 or 2 festivals in the US who, because they've sort of talent scouts, could say, have seen it or heard that it won the best audience at the wonderful, you know, Palm Beach International Film Festival, mm-hmm. who I'm very grateful for, I must add. I'm so grateful that they accepted it. And in some respects, I'm amazed because, as I said, it's a very British film. And sometimes, you know, the humour doesn't translate. But I think the humour in the film is so broad that it does. So, get back to your original question, I'm waiting to hear whether there
okay.
There's a number of festivals I'm waiting to hear, but there's actually 2 in the US who've actually contacted me and asked me to submit it for their festival, which is usually
great.
A good sign.
Yeah.
So, you know, and not obviously in the same state as Florida, but not that far away from Florida.
Okay. What's your website that people can find out more about the film and about you?
Well, there's a number of websites, but for the film, it's Best Little Whorehouse in Rochdale.com.
Okay.
And then there's another one for my first feature, which, strangely enough, never screened at a festival in the U.S. Probably because it involves, although it's a black comedy in the vein of the Coen brothers, but it involves teenagers with guns, drugs, money, and murder. And it possibly didn't translate from that point of view, but that's called, there's a website for that called rebelswithoutaclue.co.uk. And generally, they all seem to link together, so at the same time, you can find out about me. And for people who may be interested, as I said, I teach screen acting, and I have a website for that, which is vernonactingmethod.co.uk.
vernonactingmethod.co.uk?
vernonactingmethod.co.uk. And I've sort of taught also in LA, but I taught screen acting. I actually teach beginners, as long as you're over the age of 18, I teach beginners. I've taught actors who had a lot of success in TV, and as I say, I'm geared very much towards TV and film. Everything I do is on camera, so actors tend to love or hate having to look at themselves to see how much they're blinking or their eye lines are wrong or so forth. But there's a lot of information about me on there.
And there you have a new film coming up as well that you're working on,
yes,
right?
I'm actually currently in pre-production, and I've just scheduled it, and I'm shooting it from the 29th of June over the month of July, and that's scheduled in a normal way because logistically there's no way I can do fitting with actors. Again, this is the crazy thing, it has no budget whatsoever, and it's actually a World War II drama set actually on the night of D-Day in Normandy, and we're shooting that again in the north of England, and it's very much a character-driven piece, and that's actually being cast at present. But as I say, the problem is I've even got actors who are people I know or who are contacting me from Los Angeles saying, you know, could I audition for it or whatever, and I'm saying, well, you know, there's no money to even fly them over and put them in a hotel. And I'm seeing people saying, oh, well, can I still audition? And you know, which is wonderful, you know, which is wonderful because there's such a talent base. And I think the thing with drama, again, there's no stars in it, no, you know, no big names, because it's so hard these days to, you know, you could say break through, even if you're winning awards and things, you know, to sort of hang around for 3 years just when you've got a script ready to go, trying to get an actor to fit in with, you know, you're fitting in with a lead actor who's a named credit, and they say, well, as soon as I can do it, it's 2 years' time. And even then, just getting finance to get actors on board for high caliber of, you could say, notoriety is incredibly difficult. And I got that point where I'm a patient filmmaker, but I'm not patient when it comes to just waiting around when I've got a good script that's ready to go.
Yeah, well, we're running out of time today. I may have to bring you back because I know you're also a screenwriter, and I want to delve into that, but maybe we can talk about that at a different time because now we're running out of time. But thanks for talking with me today.
Okay, thank you very much, Rachel. And I'm certainly happy to come back some other time.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ian. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was Ian Vernon, and we did run out of time there, but hopefully you were able to hear him okay during the entire interview. I am going to bring him back because I know I think the audio was a little bit warbly there, and he gave a lot of great information, so we'll probably cover again some of those same points at a later time. But I also want to get into screenwriting with him because he has a couple different things that he's sold to Disney. He's gone to the American film market, which we didn't get to talk about, and also I wanted to talk about the difference between shooting in England versus shooting in America. All of those issues, hopefully we can save for another time to bring him back. He called me all the way from Manchester, England, so thank you, Ian. Okay, guys, also, if you haven't heard any of my old shows, you can always go back and listen to the archives here on Indie Streak. I've interviewed a lot of different directors, visual artists, and et cetera, involved in the film industry, and you can check those shows out at any time. Also, check out my other show, which is also here on Blog Talk Radio, called Basics of the Biz, which is just me talking about the industry from my point of view as an actor, what I've gone through, and some of the basic things that you need to know if you're just getting into the business. It's based on a book I wrote called Basics of the Biz, which you can purchase on Amazon.com. And in addition, please check out my website, which is independentstreak.ning.com. That's independentstreak, S-T-R-E-A-K, .ning, N-I-N-G.com. And on that site, I have a lot of different reviews, interviews, upcoming events, usually specifically to Florida, but I do have other areas as well, since I am in Florida. In addition, I have been filming personally quite a bit. I just worked on a movie called Caught in the Middle, which we are going to be doing one more scene, and then we're going to be wrapping that up. That's going to be an excellent production, excellent film. And I just did another movie called The Shades of Evil, short film. In addition, I'm going to be doing Absolution, a sci-fi series, and I'm very excited about that. I'm shooting my scene on June 11th. Check out the website for this show. It's called www.absolutionshow.com. That's the link. So absolutionshow.com, check that out, because this is a sci-fi series. We're shooting the pilot for it. I play a crazy character, and I think you're really going to like this show. The series website tells a little bit, but it's just a little tease, because there's a lot of characters, a lot of really interesting things going on in this series, so make sure you check out that website. Okay, I will be back next Sunday, guys, interviewing someone else. You never know who it might be. So you do want to tune in next Sunday, same time, same bad time, same bad channel, here at 1 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. And I will talk to you then. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.